This is the Mindful Experiment Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Vic. Excited that you're here. This podcast is all about diving deep into the mind and understanding this experiment or this game we call life. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Hey everyone, it's Dr. Vic, and you're listening to another episode here on the Mindful Experiment. As this week, I had a guest that I was very excited to have on. I do have excitement to all my guests because they all serve the purpose in the adding value to the podcast. But this is one that I was a little more excited because it was the co-founder of Mind Valley. And I've been a fan of Mind Valley for about 15 years now. On and off, I look at what they're up to and what they're doing. And I've read some of Ishan's books and done some courses and so forth. And I think the movement of what they do is absolutely amazing. So you can check them out there. But I got the opportunity to interview Christina Lacani. And we talked about her new book coming out, Becoming Flawsome, which I think is an absolutely great book and great book for humanity and so much more. But we dove into the whole conditioning process of the world and how we're always seeking outside ourselves and how critically really is important for us to look at when it comes to making a mistake in life. How we really view it is what really matters, not what society tells us and other things, but our own opinion of that. And we shared some examples and so much more. And we talked about the imperfections and how they make us flawsome and so many other things. And I thought this was a great interview, really went well. As you know, I don't prep for a lot of my interviews. So this one, I just walked right in and I let the energy take us wherever it goes. And we talked about a little bit of parenthood and childhood, growing up and neural development of children and how we condition and all these other things. But it's really learning to understand the greatness of who we really are and finding your path and defining what you are. What do you choose to be as a human being in this world? And you may, those words sound familiar because those are the things I've shared on the podcast many times about defining who you are and what do you want to define for your world and choose to experience that matters to you and nobody else. To me, that is true fulfillment in life. So I'll tell you a little bit about Christina. Christina Mond Lacani is an entrepreneur, international speaker, and artist. She started her career in the government office in her native Estonia, and by her mid-20s, achieved a level of success mostly known to male politicians at the end of their careers. It was shortly after that Christina and her husband, Vishan, founded Mind Valley. From a small meditation business operating out of the couple's apartment in New York, the company quickly grew into a global educational organization offering top training for peak human performance to hundreds of thousands of students all around the world. Christina believes life is too important to be taken seriously and makes sure to bring fun in every one of her roles as a teacher, mother, entrepreneur, philanthropist, and world traveler. Christina helps her students to virtually hack happiness by taking them through her unique framework, Hacking Happiness, a unique framework of belonging, balancing your life, taking in every moment, and paying close attention to the small daily choices. While belonging to a community has positively impacted happiness levels, Christina is sure that real lasting happiness is cultivated. Christina is also the author of These Transformational Quests, 7 Days to Happiness, Live by Your Own Rules, and The Art of Being Flawsome. Christina talks about personal transformation, authenticity, understanding and accepting oneself, and a path to happiness. Sit back, relax, enjoy this episode. I hope you enjoyed this one as much as I did. But here is Christina Mond Lacani. Christina, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
I'm excited to have you on. I've been a big fan of you and your husband's work for quite some time. I think I was in chiropractic school. It was about 12, 13 years ago where I got exposed to Mind Valley. And I love what you guys are up to. I love what you guys are doing. I'm a big fan of all the work. It aligns very well with my values and what I'm trying to do for myself. So I appreciate you and commend you for that. I'm excited to dive in. I want to start first. You got a new book out and there's so many questions I have to ask. And I'm going to try to take a step back here first. And I really want to ask the question of what is, you know, I've written 3 books. I know, you know, there's always a, you know, this curious, like who did you write the book for first? I always love asking that question.
Myself. for myself? I know it's not the answer that probably my publisher and my marketers would like to hear, but that's the truth. Because you know the way the convention goes is that the book has to start with somebody, well, with the author saying that you have this book and you have to read this book because that's going to make your life so wonderful. And it's true. I believe my book is going to help a lot of people. I believe in the message that I have, but I think that no matter what kind of story we tell ourselves in the world, whatever we do in this world, we do it for ourselves. And it's important to acknowledge that little fact. I did write it for myself. Of course, I've been in personal growth for 20 years. And obviously, I've heard the line, you have to write a book for years. But I'm obstinate by nature. And I wouldn't write a book just because the business model requires it. So I call, jokingly, I call this book my COVID baby. And I guess in confinement, we were a little bit existentialist, but I wrote it for myself. No question about that. I had this burning desire to express myself, which I did.
I love that. And I can relate 100% with that. All the three books I've written, everyone always asks, well, who'd you write it for? Myself. It was for myself. Would you say, is it for yourself at a younger age? Is like you wish you had that at a younger age?
No.
Okay.
Not quite. You see, I'm not teaching something which, for example, if I was, say, talking about business or PR or marketing, whatever, then yes, a lot of the lessons I would probably want to get as early on as possible. But I'm talking about life. And when it comes to life, if I had all the knowledge when I was born, if I got the tutorial and went through it and did my exams with flying colors, I don't think I would have enjoyed my life, because life, what makes life meaningful is the experience, the real human experience that we go through. So no, I wouldn't give it to me personally at a younger age, because I guess I needed all these lessons. And yes, sometimes they were painful, but in my case, I needed all of them. Would I give it to my children? Of course, I would like them to read this book, but their journey is going to be different and their lessons are going to be very different. So maybe they won't do the mistakes I had been doing for 40 years before I started understanding what's going on. But you know, this book or whatever I share there was my path. And no, I wouldn't have deprived myself of that path.
I love how you share that too, because it's so many times we get so fixated and try to, especially like with COVID. COVID was a great example of uncertainty and not knowing what the future holds. And a lot of people were in a fear state, maybe fear of the whole thing of COVID, but it also just not knowing what's going to happen to life, what's going to happen to us and what's going to happen in the future. And you bring up a great point, I think, is that we, and this is something I've been working on for years to try to perfect even better, is like, life's going to have things that come up. This is a beauty in the process of what keeps life interesting. And if it was just what we want it to be all the time, how exciting would that really be?
Well, you know, a philosopher in me wants to comment on two things. First of all, COVID only made uncertainty more obvious, but uncertainty has always been there and always will be there, whether there's COVID or non-COVID or war, like it's happening in Europe right now. But you know what's another thing, and that's probably a little bit gruesome. There's a quote from one of my favorite novels by a Russian novelist, Bulgakov. And one of the characters there says that the fact that the human being is mortal is only half the problem. The real problem is that the human being is unexpectedly mortal. And I think this is something which we always have to remember, because we do not know what's going to happen. Yes, we can make plans, we can go towards plans, we can achieve goals, but ultimately it is uncertainty. It is we don't know yet. We don't know what's going to happen. So it is important to remember that, because that gives us some kind of sense of urgency to actually not waste your life away and excuse yourself with all sorts of circumstances or wait for something. I think it's maybe it's not fit for someone in the Middle Ages to say that, but you have to seize the day.
You do. I mean, you only have, like, you know, a year ago, my wife and I decided to leave Illinois and move to Knoxville, Tennessee. And it was something that we wanted to do for 4 years. It was pre-COVID. I would say it was pre-COVID we had this plan. It wasn't COVID trying to get out, but it was one of the things. COVID kind of accelerated the process. And it was kind of like, you know what? We've been wanting to do this. We want to, we don't have a family yet. We want to start a family. And it's like, seize the day, take the opportunity now that's showing up, because, you know, if we had kids, we knew we weren't going to leave Illinois. So I'm like, let's do it. We don't have kids yet. Then we could start a family. And we have, and it's been a blessing. There's been ups and downs like anything else, right? That uncertainty is always there, and it's not always what you think it's going to be sometimes. But there's always a beauty in the process. And I always, and it's one of those things where, this is where I love the title of your book a lot, because of being flossom. I gotta ask that question. What does it mean to be flossom?
I think this word is still being defined. I was curious and I Googled it, and I discovered quite a lot of different definitions for it in Urban Dictionary, but it is not a word which is widely understood. So which is cool. We'll get to define it. In my book, I don't give a very clear definition to the word flossom for one very simple reason. I'm talking about finding your path back to real you. And the real you is such a unique destination for every single reader who picks up the book. So flossom is part of being the real you. And I think that every human being defines their version of flossom. In very simple terms, flossom means being flawed, imperfect, and still being, not still, but being awesome and valuable because of your imperfections and because of your flaws. But what it means exactly for each human being, that's for each human being to define, because what's flawsom for me might be not a big deal for you, or maybe a deal breaker for you. So it's a unique destination for every single reader.
Would you say it's like the flaws that we have, or the imperfections that we have, is actually what makes us perfect or what makes us awesome? If I broke the word up a little bit.
Yes, you know, yes and no. Yes, because it is ultimately so. But, you know, it's such an interesting thing when we talk about life, and if we philosophize a little bit about life, you can say a thing and it may sound very superficial or very trite, or you can look deeper into it and it starts actually having a very different meaning. So when it comes to being awesome despite your flaws, I think we also misunderstand this concept a little bit, because when I say something like that, I imagine a person who says like, yeah, I'm imperfect, so what? Love me. The question is, what do you love yourself? You know, it's one thing to say, I still love myself. And the other thing is to actually feel it, and not to necessarily need to say that, yes, I'm flawed, but I'm still worthy of love. Because I think love is so much more, stable than love doesn't require affirmations. Love doesn't require to be declared, to be stamped upon other people. So I think that when you truly embrace your flaws and your imperfections, you are okay with even laughing at yourself, with even sometimes saying like, oh God, I hate that about myself, but I do love myself despite it. And with it. Now, when it comes to your strength, that's a step further. Because if we are completely honest, then most people are not very well aware of their flaws. I call them dragons. I like to call them dragons because it's a little bit more generic term. And we are not talking about just the qualities, but also sometimes experiences or certain ways, the way we are in our life, that we maybe don't accept or don't like to face. So we're very often not aware of our dragons. So one part of the journey is to actually be honest with yourself and to notice those dragons and to accept them and to be at peace with them. But a much more complicated task is to find your unique value in those things, those very things that maybe make you shrink and cringe at the moment, or maybe make you feel ashamed and maybe unworthy or not lovable. To realize how these very things have made you what you are and give you your most unique value. It's like what you said in the very beginning, would I like to give this book to my earlier self? Not to my earlier self, for sure, because then I wouldn't have my dragons and then I wouldn't have found my unique value.
I love how you share that. And I love how you bring up the aspect of love, too, because I think that, would you agree, or maybe help me out there a little bit with this, is that when you're talking about love and the way you brought it up, is that really then the true self of who we are in kind of loving, you know, coming from that place? Is that kind of what you're referencing to?
It's, you know, self-love is is a very sensitive topic in a way. And I've spoken, of course, about self-love for years. And I know that when I ask people on a scale of 0 to 10, how much you love yourself, the average score would be 7, which is actually pretty healthy. But when you talk to people in real life, and of course, I don't have statistics for that. Maybe I should look it up. But when you talk to people, you do notice the signs of the lack of self-love. You don't need to even talk to specific people. Look at what's happening in social media, our exhibitionist culture, or our fascination with approval, with likes, with comments, and with, you know, big following. It's these are all symptoms of lack of self-love, or even selfish behavior is usually a symptom of lack of self-love. So there is not enough self-love in our society, but yet we don't recognize that. And very often we misunderstand self-love. So if we see, let's say, a young influencer bragging about their life, we very often think that this person is self-obsessed, which is true, but also that they're selfish and that they love themselves too much. In reality, usually it is the reverse. The love, true love, whether it's love between a parent and a child, two lovers, romantic love, or love towards yourself, true love doesn't really need fanfare. It doesn't need attention. It doesn't need approval, because it's not about the facade or what it shows. It's not about how it declares itself. It's about how it feels. It's a relationship. It's not such a tangible thing. So it's a little bit hard to explain. But what I was talking about earlier is that, you know, if somebody says, hey, look, I'm imperfect, but I still love myself, it doesn't convince me of anything. It's just a statement, which is a good statement in essence. What convinces me is when I see you actually making a mistake, or acting less than, or not maybe, or failing. How do you treat yourself in those cases? Do you have the love then when you are less than perfect?
Just want to take a quick break here and just share with you, if you've been enjoying this episode, please do me a huge favor and just share it with a friend, a family member, someone that you know would benefit or enjoy listening to this just like you are. If this is your first time listening to the episode, please subscribe if you haven't done so already. It allows you not to miss another update or episode release that we do. If you're enjoying this, please do me a huge favor and share a review on whatever platform that you listen to at the podcast on. It helps expand our reach and our mission out there and so much more. Now, let's go ahead and let's get back to the show. I love that explanation, because I say something that, you know, you can never see what's inside until it's kind of like a fruit, right? You squeeze an orange, you're going to get orange juice. You know that every single time. You squeeze a grapefruit, you're going to get grapefruit. You know that grapefruit juice every single time. You can never know what you really have within yourself until you get stressed and squeezed, because you can say things, right? And you brought up a huge thing that I talk a lot about, that I'm a big, like, external factors giving us validation of things, right? So we're always looking outside ourselves for something, like, oh, I have a very wonderful marriage. Look at this. And I boast here and I do this. Or even people who are financially wealthy, they may be financially wealthy, but they're boasting it. And I'm always like, that's not that they're using that as being their value. And they gave their power away to that. Because if I take that away, now we're stressing them, then we actually see what's really true. And then if they're still at this, if they're still living, you know, thinking the same way, then it's like, no, they got it then. But most of the time, they won't. Most of the time, they'll break down and say, okay, and I lost my value. I lost who I am. I lost my truth, or what I thought I was. And
unfortunately, you know, you're so right, because unfortunately, high achievers are particularly deprived of self-love. And I know that because I've been ambitious all my life. We are perfectionists by nature. Most of us are perfectionists by nature. And we are taught from young age to negotiation. Love is given if you deserve it. Like, imagine a small child. A small child behaves well, and the parent, well-meaning parent, says like, oh my God, I'm so proud of you. I love you so much. You're so cool. And then if a child does something bad, maybe not just fail, but let's say a parent says not to do something and child does that, Very, very often what happens is that the love, or at least the external of the love, or the show of the love, is being withdrawn. You don't deserve it right now because you didn't behave well. So we learn that pattern from a very early age, from parents, from teachers, from friends. We're given love when we deserve it. And when we behave bad, the love is withdrawn. Maybe not really withdrawn, but at least we don't see it. It disappears. So we treat ourselves the same way. And in, you know, we all have the picture of what it means to be the better version of me. And I'm willing to love myself as long as I'm aspiring to that better version, or at least I somehow resemble that better version. But if I misbehave, if I perform less than, for example, you want to have a perfect body, you exercise, you eat properly, you sleep well, but then one day something happens, you stuff your face with pizza and ice cream because you were stressed. How do you feel about yourself the next day? Do you beat yourself up for being human? That's the question. Do you withdraw your own love because you didn't behave perfect? Because you were not trying hard enough. This is such a horrible life to be constantly trying so hard to be worthy of your own love.
You bring up so many things I could talk for hours with you on. I mean, it's one of those things where my background in neuroscience and, you know, being a pediatric chiropractor and looking at neurodevelopment patterns, not just for development of where an infant should be, but also the conditioning and imprints and what happens. And it's one of those things where I just became a father 6 months ago, and it's one of those things that my wife and I talk a lot about. Like, you brought up a great point that I talk heavily on, is that, you know, like somebody was talking, I was like, I would never tell my child that, hey, you're good girl, good job, or good this. And they look and they go, why would you not encourage them? I said, hold up, you have to understand. I want my child to know that was good based on their standards, not mine. I don't want my child to ever look at me for an approval ever. And I'm like, that, and it's hard for me. I'm conditioned. So there's times I'm just playing with her and I'm like, oh, good girl. I'm like, oh, no, good girl. I'm like, I gotta get that out of my head. Thankfully, she's only 6 months, so I'm still good here. But it's one of those things where it's conditioned and hardwired, because look at it, we go to school. I'm only a good student if I get what kind of grades. I'm only good at sports if I qualify into what. I'm only good at this. It's conditioned in every way. And even in social media shows it too. So I can talk all day on that. And now I lost my train of thought on the other thing I wanted to ask you.
No, but you know what? What I think about it is that what would make you a good father or a good parent? You will never be perfect with your child. You will make mistakes. And my children are a little older now. I mean, my son is 15. And sometimes I feel so horrible for certain behaviors I've had around him. You cannot be perfect, and you shouldn't be, because it's kind of not realistic. But what you can be is you can be honest with your child all the time. And I have done stupid stuff. And then I've come back to my children and just explained, like, that I was wrong. And I shouldn't have done that. And sometimes I have to ask them for forgiveness. But I think children don't need our perfection either. What they need is that we know how to, I mean, you will make mistakes in parenthood. You will make mistakes in business, in relationships. It's not about mistakes. It's about how you, what you do with your mistakes.
And that's such a huge point. I try to share that to my clients a lot. Like, don't get so caught up, because it's not about the mistake. It's about how you view that. And that's what's going to be the thing that's going to either derail you off, or, and even we just talk energy or consciousness. It's like, yeah, you're lowering your vibe. When you lower the vibe because you're looking at it from a negative lens, all of a sudden that's not, you're gonna, now what you really want to get to, it's just not going to happen unless you shift gears. But yeah, it's one of those things. Like, one thing I was always told, and it's like, and I've learned this through many different things, but it's like, you're going to make mistakes. That's fine. But just, you know, like, especially in children or something, it's like, but like you brought up, just have a conversation. Like, hey, apologize, ask for forgiveness when it's needed. Hey, you know what? I was, teach them that I'm not perfect. And that's something that I didn't see as a, for myself. I had, you know, parents who, well, my father was more like a perfectionist, so he never wanted to look like he was wrong. And there's good and bad in that. But at the same token, it's like, no, I want to show my kids how human I am. Because if I can show that, then all of a sudden they'll harness and go, it's okay to make a mistake. It's okay. And I'm okay with that mistake. And they can love themselves more. And this is the same thing that comes back to what you're sharing with just the woman who had donuts and pizza and has been working so hard. It's like, Yeah, most people, they eat that. I've seen people who are in great shape and they eat that and they go, I don't care. I was having a bad day. I wanted to indulge myself, get a huge dopamine kick. And he's like, I don't care. That's what I wanted. Or I had a gallon of ice cream. I'm like, a gallon of ice cream? Holy cow. And he's like, hey, man, I don't do it often. And I was like, I'm not judging. It's just I'm blown away that you can eat a gallon of ice cream in one sitting. That just amazes me. I'm not judging. Trust me. So, but if you look at them, you would never notice it because their mindset's all about it is what it is. And I love that because I think that's what, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but that's like self-compassion. You're being compassionate for yourself, which is another form of love.
It's definitely so. And actually in my book, I don't talk so much about love, but I think partially the word love is overstretched to be very thin, and you can put any meaning to it. And I am a huge fan of seeing the essence of things behind the facade. So I prefer talking about kindness because kindness is more practical skill than love. You can disagree, but still be kind. So you can eat a tub of ice cream and disagree with that choice and know that that probably is not moving you towards your goals, but you can still be kind to yourself in that circumstance. You can say to yourself that, yeah, that wasn't maybe the wisest decision, but you can still be kind. Love is a little bit harder to master, honestly, for most of us, if we're looking into the essence of the word love. For self-love, I like to have, as an example, love for children. If you can love yourself the way you love your children, then you're probably doing very well.
That's a great like a bar or standard to hold to because it is so true on so many levels because we're so unconditional with them. We accept them for who they are and so much more. I don't know if it was it the Dalai Lama or someone said love is kindness, and I've always embraced that. And it's one of those things like it's so true in a lot of ways because like how you said, I love the way you phrase that because it is a form of you're being kind even though you don't like this choice. You're still being kind to yourself and so much more. There was a question I wanted to ask that I wasn't asked earlier, and it's all about defining who we really are. Who are we really?
Now you ask the eternal question of humankind. I think the moment humans started thinking in abstract terms, they started asking themselves, who am I and why am I on this planet? I wish I knew the answer. But as I said, it's a unique destination for every single human being, and it might come a little unexpected from someone who is a co-founder in one of the biggest platforms in personal growth and education. But the truth is that I'm being a little absolutist right now. I think there are no absolutes in life. Who am I to tell anyone what it means to be the real you? I do not know. There are now 8 billion people on planet Earth. There are 8 billion destinations to the real you. Only you know the answer to the question, what it means to be real, what it means to be authentic, what it means to love yourself. I can't tell you that. I can't tell anyone. I can tell what it means to be real me. That I can tell.
Now, I appreciate you saying it that way, because I was just because we were talking about finding out who you really are. And I'm like, I got to ask that question just to see what your response would be. So you said it very elegantly, and I greatly appreciate the way you brought that in. And it is true. I mean, this is something that I think we live in a culture today that we're trying to we define so much because we're so driven by left brain, which is compartmentalizing everything and putting labels on every little thing. And it really says, well, this is how it is. If you want to be this, this is what it is. If you want to do this, this is what it is. And my approach has always been like, no, this is your unique approach. This is like when I coach somebody, I'm always like, this is going to be your unique path. Like, I don't care what anything else is, unless you do, then that's fine. But we're going to create what you want to create, because if you can do that and that's unique to you and authentic to you, well, that's fulfillment. And if we can find fulfillment, we need more of that in the world, and choosing what our path is and figuring out what that is and having guidance to that, to go that route. So I appreciate that, because some people could have said, well, we're a soul and we're this and we're that and we're all these other things, which is true, but it could have went down a whole different route with that. I love it. So when it comes to then, your book and everything, who's your audience?
I think it's Of course, it's a book that's written for humanity in general, in the sense that I don't pick a very narrow niche in my conversation. But considering my background, of course, I mostly talk to people in the Western Hemisphere in fairly affluent countries, and I don't touch a lot about on the problems of, let's say, people who would live in circumstances where they might not have the full control of their lives and their choices. In addition to that, I personally like to talk to people who are either very long time in personal growth and transformation and are starting to get a little disillusioned, because I've been in this industry for a long time. I take the liberty to make fun at a lot of the things that we do. I believe it's like making fun about myself. And I also like to talk to people who are not in personal growth and transformation just yet, who live their lives, maybe get stuck a little bit and confused, because they're good people, they do all the right things, they tick all the right boxes, but still something is wrong. You know, I'm going full steam ahead towards my goals, but somehow I don't feel fulfilled or maybe happy. How dare I not to feel happy if I'm doing everything right and I have everything I need in my life? So I like to talk to people like that as well, who actually question, but maybe are not convinced by personal growth and transformation. I love skeptical readers very much, because I come from the background where questioning, where not easily agreeing is the way to go. So these are the kind of people, but generally it's any human being who has lived life enough to start wondering if what they have in their life, if that's it, or if there's more to it.
It's a good place to be, you know, especially if you're trying to figure out if there is more to life, or is this just, this is what it is. And I know the older we get, the more our subconscious gets more hardwired, and we get stuck in those ways of thinking like, well, this is just life. This is just what it is, rather than seeking more, knowing that there's more out there for us to expand and evolve and so much more. So, no, I love that very much, very much. So where can people get a hold of your book and be able to purchase it and so forth? Where's it available at?
So I would love people to go to my website to get the book, because then it will come with my free program, because right now it's only available for pre-orders. So before it gets launched and is on the bookshelves and can be shipped, you can get the book from my website, which is christinamann.com/book. And then while you're waiting, you'll get my program with it. And I have to say that my name is written in an Estonian way, so it's Christina with a K.
Very cool. And I'll have that in the show notes. How else can people follow you, Christina, and see all the work and keep up with the book and other things that you'll be doing?
So, of course, Mind Valley. I'm a co-founder of Mind Valley, so you'll find me there. But my personal everything, all the social media, my personal handle is Christina Mand, Christina with a K. And I'm everywhere, like every human being in the 21st century.
And for all the listeners, I will have all that in the show notes for you and so much more. And check out Mind Valley. She did not ask me to do this. I'm a big fan of it. So check it out. Christina, this was a joy to have you on and to take time and share space with us here at the Mindful Experiment. I just want to thank you for the work you're doing, for the book, to helping humanity. It's much needed for your message. I really believe that from the bottom of my heart, and for Mind Valley and all that you guys do for consciousness and helping people evolve to more who they really are. I just want to thank you.
Thank you so much for having me and for your wonderful questions. It was a very pleasant conversation.
Thanks for tuning into the podcast. If you found this episode to be inspirational, pay it forward by sharing it with someone that you know can benefit from this. If this is your first time tuning in, please follow us, connect with us, so you don't miss another amazing episode. And until next time, keep rocking and rolling.